We are in the book of Numbers, of course, and we're going to reach chapter 22 and 23, though I will need a reader.
Then the children of Israel moved and camped in the plains of Moab on the side of the Jordan across from Jericho. Now Balak, the son of Zippor, saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites, and Moab was exceedingly afraid of the people because they were many, and Moab was sick with dread because of the children of Israel. So Moab said to the elders of Midian, "Now this company will lick up everything around us as an ox licks up the grass of the field." And Balak, the son of Zippor, was king of the Moabites at that time. Then he sent messengers to Balaam, the son of Beor, at Pethor, which is near the river in the land of the sons of his people, to call him, saying, "Look, a people has come from Egypt. See, they cover the face of the earth and are sitting next to me. Therefore, please, come at once. Curse these people for me, for they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I shall be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land. For I know that he who you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed." So the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed from the diviner's fee, with the diviner's fee in their hand, and they came to Balaam and spoke to him with the words of Balak. And he said to them, "Lodge here tonight, and I will bring back word to you as the Lord speaks to me." So the princes of Moab stayed with Balaam. Then God came to Balaam and said, "Who are these men with you?" So Balaam said to God, "Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent to me, saying, 'Look, a people has come out of Egypt, and they cover the face of the earth. Come now, curse them for me. Perhaps I shall be able to overpower them and drive them out.'" And God said to Balaam, "You shall not go with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed." So Balaam rose in the morning and said to the princes of Balak, "Go back to your land, for the Lord has refused to give me permission to go with you." And the princes of Moab rose and went to Balak and said, "Balaam refuses to come with us." Then Balak again sent princes more numerous and more honorable than they. And they came to Balaam and said to him, "Thus says Balak, the son of Zippor, please let nothing hinder you from coming to me, for I will certainly honor you greatly, and I will do whatever you say to me. Therefore, please come, curse this people for me." Then Balaam answered and said to the servants of Balak, "Though Balak were to give me his house full of silver and gold, I could not go beyond the word of the Lord my God to do less or more. Now therefore, please, you also stay here tonight, that I may know what more the Lord will say to me." And God came to Balaam at night and said to him, "If the men come to call you, rise and go with them, but only the word which I speak to you, that you shall do." So Balaam rose in the morning, saddled his donkey, and went with the princes of Moab. Then God's anger was aroused because he went. And the angel of the Lord took his stand in the way as an adversary against him, and he was riding on his donkey, and his two servants were with him. Now the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand, and the donkey turned aside out of the way and went into the field. So Balaam struck the donkey to turn her back onto the road. Then the angel of the Lord stood in a narrow path between the vineyards, with a wall on this side and a wall on that side. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she pushed herself against the wall and crushed Balaam's foot against the wall. So he struck her again. Then the angel of the Lord went further and stood in a narrow place where there was no way to turn either to the right hand or to the left. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she lay down under Balaam. So Balaam's anger was aroused, and he struck the donkey with his staff. Then the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, "What have I done to you that you have struck me these three times?" And Balaam said to the donkey, "Because you have abused me, I wish there were a sword in my hand, for now I would kill you." So the donkey said to Balaam, "Am I not your donkey on which you have ridden? ever since I became yours to this day. Was I ever disposed to do this to you? And he said, No. Then the Lord opened Balaam's eyes, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand, and he bowed his head and fell flat on his face. And the angel of the Lord said to him, Why have you struck your donkey these three times? Behold, I have come out to stand against you, because your way is perverse before me. The donkey saw me and turned aside from me these three times. If she had not turned aside from me, surely I would have also killed you by now, and let her live. And Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, I have sinned, for I did not know you stood in the way against me. Now therefore, if it displeases you, I will turn back. Then the angel of the Lord said to Balaam, Go with the men, but only the word that I speak to you that you shall speak. So Balaam went with the prince of Balak. Now when Balak heard that Balaam was coming, he went out to meet him at the city of Moab, which is on the border at the Arnon, the boundary of the territory. Then Balak said to Balaam, Did I not earnestly send to you, calling for you? Why did you not come to me? Am I not able to honor you? And Balaam said to Balak, Look, I have come to you. Now, have I any power at all to say anything? The word that God puts in my mouth, that I must speak. So Balaam went with Balak, and they came to Kirjath Huzoth. Then Balak offered oxen and sheep, and he sent some to Balaam and to the princes who were with him. So it was the next day that Balak took Balaam and brought him up to the high places of Baal, that there he might observe the extent of the people. Then Balaam said to Balak, Build 7 altars for me here, and prepare for me even 7 bulls and 7 rams. And Balak did just as Balaam had spoken, and Balak and Balaam offered a bull and a ram on each altar. Then Balaam said to Balak, Stand by your burnt offering, and I will go. Perhaps the Lord will come to meet me, and whatever he shows me, I will tell you. So he went to a desolate height. And God met Balaam, and he said to him, I have prepared the 7 bulls, and I have offered on each altar a bull and a ram. Then the Lord put a word in Balaam's mouth and said, Return to Balak, and thus you shall speak. So he returned to him, and there he was, standing by his burnt offering, he and all the princes of Moab. And he took up his oracle and said, Balak, the king of Moab, has brought me from Aram, from the mountains of the east. Come, curse Jacob for me, and come, denounce Israel. How shall I curse whom God has not cursed? How shall I denounce whom the Lord has not denounced? For from the top of the rocks I see him, and from the hills I behold him. There, a people dwelling alone, not reckoning itself among the nations. Who can count the dust of Jacob, or number 1/4 of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous, and let my end be like this. Then Balak said to Balaam, What have you done to me? I took you to curse my enemies, and look, you have blessed them bountifully. So he answered and said, Must I not take heed to speak what the Lord has put in my mouth? Then Balak said to him, Please, come with me to another place from which you may see them. You shall see only the outer part of them, and shall not see them all. Curse them for me from there. So he brought him to the field of Zophim, to the top of Pisgah, and built 7 altars, and offered a bull and a ram on each altar. And he said to Balak, Stand here by your burnt offering, while I meet the Lord over there. Then the Lord met Balaam, and put a word in his mouth, and said, Go back to Balak, and thus you shall speak. So he came to him, and there he was, standing by his burnt offering, and the princes of Moab were with him. And Balak said to him, What has the Lord spoken? Then he took up his oracle and said, "Rise up, Balak, and hear. Listen to me, son of Zippor. God is not a man that he should lie, nor a son of man that he should repent. Has he said and will he not do? Or has he spoken and will he not make it good? Behold, I have received a command to bless. He has blessed, and I cannot reverse it. He has observed iniquity in Jacob. He has not observed iniquity in Jacob, nor has seen wickedness in Israel. The Lord his God is with him, and the shout of a king is among them. God brings them out of Egypt. He has strength like a wild ox. For there is no sorcery against Jacob, nor any divination against Israel. It now must be said to Jacob and of Israel, Oh, what God has done! Look, a people rises like a lioness and lifts itself like a lion. It shall not lie down until it devours the prey and drinks the blood of the slain." Then Balak said to Balaam, "Neither curse them at all, nor bless them at all." So Balaam answered and said to Balak, "Did I not tell you, saying, all that the Lord speaks, that I must do?" Then Balak said to Balaam, "Please come, I will take you to another place. Perhaps it will please God that you may curse them for me from there." Yeah. So Balak took Balaam to the top of Peor that overlooks the wasteland. Then Balaam said to Balak, "Build for me here 7 altars, and prepare for me here 7 bulls and 7 rams." And Balak did as Balaam had said, and offered a bull and a ram on every altar.
Okay, just a minute. I'll get your questions here. There's some things I like to understand a little thing, because I'm a guy who kind of looks at the Hebrew words and say, what is it meaning behind it? Balaam is not a good, it's not even close to being spelt right. It's B-Lam. Bil-Am. Bil means not in Hebrew. Am means people. So his name really means he is not people of God. Okay, that's basically what that word Bil-Am is, how you pronounce his name. I don't know, I didn't look up the history, why we have it spelt in some of your English translations of Ba-Am. I don't know why Ba-La-Am. It doesn't make sense to my brain, but if it was actually spelt the way in the very beginning, you kind of recognize a very fascinating first. The first three letters of the, or the first three, two words is a bet and a lamed, which means not. And the last two letters is a ayin and a mim, which means people. So they're not a people. This guy is not a people, meaning not a people of God. He's a foreigner, quite a bit of a foreigner. So I want to kind of clarify that statement. So Bil-Am is a better pronunciation of his name. And that's the only reason why I'm saying this, because it's kind of interesting when we look at the name and find out what they mean. And Balak means a devastator, one who destroys things. So we got a couple of these two big names I want you to kind of get in mind. So one is a destroyer, likes to destroy things. And the other is not of God, or not of the people of God. Bill? You forgot? We can ask? Okay. I don't mind to clarify those. It's very fascinating to know what names mean, so you have an idea of who and how God is looking at things and why he has revealed this information. This particular, the 24th chapter and 25th chapter I'll probably cover next week. But this is a part of a very interesting section here in these two chapters. One of the first things I want to mention here is Midian. Midian, remember, was one of the sons of whom? Abraham. Right. And his name means one who strives, always fighting, one who is always having a conflict with people. That's what his name really means. And here we've got a story of Moab, or Moab, and the Midian are now aligned together. They're two different peoples, but now they have joined together to see if they can't destroy or stop Israel from entering in. Now, where were they located? Do you remember? Very first verse of chapter. Okay. So they're right, almost ready to cross over. All right. And a lot of things are happening now. Once again, the book of Numbers is not in chronological order. They are event order. Things are in event. And when we get to the 24th and 25th chapter, we'll see some things are said there that doesn't seem to fit that would have happened that time, but they could have happened that time. How far away were they? We haven't got how long they were there. It doesn't tell us. And it doesn't matter. All we have to do is find out what it is that Elohim is trying to get across for us today, that we may understand the Word of God. So that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. The other thing, some of your translations, I want to go, they'll open up for discussion here. It's in the other chapter, chapter 23, I guess it is. And his translation of the King James, New King James, is translated right, but some of you in your old King James, they use the word unicorn. That is an artificial name. It does not exist. In Hebrew, the word is not a unicorn. It is rim. All it is a wild animal with horns. That's what it means. It's not a tamed one. It's not one that one would be, you know, sacrificed on the altar. It's a wild animal or a wild ox that's not been tamed. And so we go into there. It's like you can't. We'll get to that section. Comes. We'll find out exactly why God called it that way. Okay. Any comments about anything? First, let's work with chapter 22.
Chapter 22, verse, let's see where it says, where the name of Balak, it says he was the king. Oh no, I mean Balaam was the son of Peor, or son.
Peor.
Yeah. Who was that, and where did he come from? It says not the people, but.
Peor doesn't mean it. His name, what was translated in your English is Balaam, is. Bil-am. Bil means the word, first part means not. The last part is the word for people. Okay, when we hear the word amim, that means my people. And sometimes we have one of our songs, I think, has it with amim, means that God's or God's people. So this particular prophet, okay, is no relationship to anything, to the house of Israel. All right.
So how did he know God except for what he saw then?
Okay, now where did he come from?
That's why I was asking.
Where did he come from?
This is say Peor.
Peor.
Father.
He reveals his origin in the first later on when he Correct. First speaks, he says that he's from Aram.
Aram. Now, where is that at? Let's go on here. We're going to have to. He says that he is by. Let's see, I got my notes here. Let me just keep on going here. He said he's by a river. Where is that statement at? Verse 5. He sent. By the way, that word messenger is plurality. It means. It's word, but they translated for angels. Remember, the word angel means messenger. In this particular case, he's got messengers in his plurality. And so he sent in his, quote, angels, if you want to use that word, to Balaam, and the son of Peor, Peor means burning. That's where we get the verb from, to kindle, to start a fire. And it's from Peor, and that means to kindle. And in your translations, most of your translations, Pitor or Pithor, it has a meaning of soothsayer. All right? Now, in your most of your translations, everyone I've looked at, I'm kind of amazed, but they put a preposition in between. And they put that preposition in between of two. All right? Take the preposition out, and you're going to have Peor, the sayer. So he is a son of Peor, okay, the burning one, or the one that's on fire, sayer. Now, what's a sayer? It's like a prophet, okay?
So Balaam comes from a family of soothsayers of Seir.
Right. This is what this comes from. And we'll find a little bit more in detail when we get into the next two chapters, 24th and 25th chapter. The reason why I'm saying this is so you have a little bit of a background of where this is all about and basically who it is. Because it doesn't say he's from that town. He said he's from Aram. Right? We read that in the previous chapter, 23. That's the actual city he's from, the area he's from. But he's from the river. What river? Euphrates River. Now, who came from Euphrates River in the old days? Who else? Abraham. Abram came from that very same area. All right? So they're coming from that city or the area of the river and on a mountain cliff. Yes, Daniel.
Well, keep in mind that, yeah, Abraham came there. So, but who was left there? Well, Laban was left there. All
right.
Of his descendants
all
were left
of her
there.
Family was
Look
left.
Look at Job. He was totally independent of all the cycle, but where did he live? Well, back to where Midian, east, the Assyrians lived. They all, none of them disconnected so much from God that they started immediately, I left Israel, thus now I will worship idols. No, many of them brought all that theory and belief and trust
in
God
with
them.
That's very important what he's saying. Do you hear what he said? We have a belief system because of, Jewish teaching, that Abraham was the one and only believer of one God. But we can't find that scripturally. I mean, was Noah a worshiper of multiple gods? Okay. Who else before Abraham that we know? Abraham's father. Correct. Regardless of what Jewish theory is, it doesn't say he was an idol maker, an idol worshiper. It doesn't say that. What else?
About Noah.
Well, you talked about Noah. And Shem. All right. Shem. Now, remember, Shem lived way up until Jacob was 16 or 17 years old, somewhere in that age. So he'd been from the time of the flood all the way up to that point. Yes, Ellie.
The goddess Ishtar came out of the Euphrates around sometime that time, too.
Correct. Now, what's so unusual about this story? Who's he talking to? Okay. Who's Balaam? Or Balaam. Who is he talking to? Elohim. Okay. Talking to Elohim. And we get into the 23rd chapter, you'll hear him say, Yahuwah, my Elohim. Did he know? He ever heard that name before? Or is this kind of added in there because, no. There's something we have to accept in reality and truth. Remember when Moses was at the burning bush? Do you remember what he asked God? How will they know? that you sent me. And what did he say?
I am that I am.
Yeah. Oh, that's where we get the word and means I came that I came. That's the literal translation of the word. I came that I came. I came. Tell them I came. Go and tell them I came, sent you. That's what that word means in plain, simple English. Now, why did he ask that question? When Moses went down to Egypt with that name, why would he say, I need to tell them what your name is? Not that they didn't know, that they will know that I talked to you. All right? And when they heard that, they said, okay. And they began to believe Moses. Yes?
Well, if I recall correctly, aren't we not supposed to question every angel who talks to us? Who are you actually from?
Yes.
And they're either going to lie to you or tell you the truth.
Okay,
but they can't say that they're from God and then they really aren't. So, he's doing what any good, self-respecting person would do.
Which makes common sense,
give me
right?
something that indicates you're telling me the truth. Well, once you cite God himself as the one who actually sending me, okay, therefore,
right.
I know you're not lying to me, because God will kill you for lying to me.
And you remember in before Moses was born, there were two women that didn't kill babies. Why didn't they kill babies? They feared Elohim. They knew who he was. It's not a strange, ordinary... I know that an awful lot of you probably believe, because I'm not saying that a lot of Israelites did not come out of the bond of Egypt having changed their, or abandoned God, but not all of them. And we have to listen carefully as we pay attention that God had been with these people from the very beginning. He had not left them alone. Okay, so you know that he is more... Euphrates is the fourth river named in the book of Genesis. Interesting number four. There are four corners. We think of rectangular, square things. God doesn't think of rectangular, square things. Though he built his tabernacles built that way. And he built that way. But for us to understand, it means all around the edge. All around the bottom of the garment. That's what basically covering all four areas of the entire garment with what's called the tzitzit. All right? Now, verse 7. And this is the King James version of it, so you understand. The elders of Moab and the elders of Midian, or the ones who strife, departed with a reward of deviation in their hand. Now, some of your old English has that. What that means, literally, is mean, if you want to go to someone who's going to be a soothsayer, you don't get it for free. I'm not asking this question to you and asking you to tell me something, but are you aware that when you go to a seer today or a one who reads the ball, and you have to pay them? They won't give you information unless you pay them, because that's the business. That's how you make money. That's what you do for a living. So this soothsayer, Balaam, soothsayer, Balaam, soothsayer, now gets money. He has to be paid for it. And the word honor has two different meanings. We think it means honor and respect. Yes, it does. But there's another term, which is honor your father and your mother. We say, okay, I honor you. No, he's not talking to 2-year-old and 3-year-old. He's talking to grown old men and old women. I mean, they were not 6, 7. They were grown men and grown women, and they are to honor. Now, how do you honor your parents? You make sure that they don't go into... You take care of them in their old age. How do you do that with? What did Apostle James say? Oh, you've got the goods to do it. And you say, be of good cheer and walk away. Well, you know what God thinks about that, right? You don't want to walk away from your own mom and your own dad. Now, sometimes your mom and dad won't want anything from you. That's a different story, all right? But it doesn't mean you not should not try to honor them, respect them with their need for help, financial, or whatever it may take. And so in a sense here, in their hand, they said, so they had something in his hand. Now, what did they have in his hand? Well, we know, we'll get to the book of Revelation in a minute, and Jude, but it was money, or the price of whatever it takes, deviation. That's the reason why he did it for money, wealth. Now, was Bilam ignorant of God? He was fully aware who he was. He was a soothsayer, which, by the way, who else in the book of Genesis was called a soothsayer? Joseph was called a soothsayer. Now, how did God speak to Joseph? Through what? Dreams. We're going to find out a little bit about here that when it's at night, then Elohim talked to him. It probably was through the dreams. Because he said, I will speak to people in dreams or visions, but there's one person I do not speak to in dreams and vision. Well, who was it? Moses. I talked to him face to face. I don't even talk to him in parables. I tell him out front right what I'm doing. And he understood it. It's a different kind of picture, right? So we have known that God, sometimes we don't believe that God would ever talk to someone who is not his people. Because that's what his name means, right? Not people of God. But he did talk with them. So we must not close off our thinking cap. Yes, Daniel.
Yeah, on that principle, all people belong to him. So he cares for each and every one of us. He's not going to sit there and say, oh, well, okay, Israel, I like you. I'll ignore every other human on earth. Let
right.
them do their own thing and wallow in mud and let them, you know, fester and die. He still took care of them, too. I mean, he owns and controls all the nations, so he's got to control what they do and be influential with what's going on in their lives, too.
Now, before we continue on more discussion on this thing, Balak, did he know who Elohim was? Oh, yes, he did, he said. Why do you think he called Balaam? Because he knew. Now, we think, oh, no, he was pagan. Doesn't say he was pagan. These are people who know who God was, but they didn't belong to God, and they were, in a sense, afraid, terrified of the people of Israel. Yes, Daniel.
Not only that, he actually knew what was clean and what was unclean.
That's right.
He actually knew what animals you could eat. He did the cows and sheep to feed Balaam the princes. There weren't pigs involved. There weren't anything nasty stuff the pagans would do.
He knew what
was clean and unclean already.
Offering. No, we'll get to the next chapter. You know, the three times in that chapter where whole offerings were offered. Seven. Seven altars, seven rams, and seven bulls. Three times. Now, do you think that Moab, the king of Moab, didn't know who God was? And he was worshiping stones and idols? Now, when you go in the history of Israel, now you're messing around with another group of people. You're talking about the Canaanites, and you're talking about the Philistines. They have a different dialogue. They began to worship gods and worship stones and images. And we have that story. Daniel went through some of that. Yes.
They went to a high place. I thought that that was like for the king, the other Elohims that are, you know, not
okay,
of God.
Okay, now, that's not necessarily true on all cases. Daniel, can you answer that question? Yes, you can.
Well, think in mind, in Balak's time, did a temple exist? Well, no. So did everybody do high places? Did even the Israelites and Moses do a high place before a temple existed? Yeah, it's called Mount Sinai. They had high places. Everybody did because there's no other place to do anything. Noah did it. Even Cain and Abel would have done the same thing.
Yep.
Some location they've chosen, all right, here's a good spot. Let's choose this one. The high place isn't necessarily a problem. It doesn't become a problem until a temple shows up and God says, you will only do it here. Which
does that kind of
it just so happened to
more?
Be he put a temple where there was a high place.
Okay.
Second part of that question was about, it almost reminded me of Jesus and the temptation. He went into the wilderness and then up the mountain and the devil tempted him. And there were three hills in this or three high places and the temptation became the same thing over again.
A high place
again.
Is not an evil place.
No, but it was a mountaintop.
Right. It was a top. Where is Jerusalem at? It's on a mountaintop. Where is Zion at? On a mountain. A high place. God is up high. When you elevate something higher than Him, whether it's on another mountain that's lower or another mountain that's higher, then He becomes a little bit upset. You can't do that. Yes.
Being that the people had many gods, or the different nations had different gods, knowing Yahweh or Yahuwah, it didn't necessarily mean, or would it necessarily mean that he actually knew him or knew of him? Because they all had different gods. It wasn't the same one that each
That's
nation...
That's true. If you talk about where the land of Canaan is at, yes. But here we're not talking about the land of Canaan. We're talking about an individual man who was a sayer, and he talked to the creator of heaven and earth, and talked to the Melech Yahuwah, the angel of the Lord. Yes.
Excuse me. Although, each nation, of course, we already know, they had their idols, they had their gods that necessarily believe in or worship, and they all were different. But just like today, I know certain things about how Allah is worshipped. I don't worship Him, but I know certain details about it. So if I, for whatever bizarre, crazy reason, thought that I needed to talk to somebody who was Muslim and needed to invite them to my place, house, whatever, and needed them to talk to their Allah God, knowing certain information about it, I would have already had prepared details or set up things for this need of mine. Just like the vice versa would happen. So I believe that Moab and Balak, they may have worshipped anything in the sun. I don't care what they worship. But they knew certain details about Balaam and the god that Balaam worshipped. So it's not like that he was unknown to him. Just like Allah is not completely unknown to me. I get the idea behind him. I get the idea of even behind Buddha. And I understand how the basics work. And I can interact with somebody in that fashion. It's just a different god of theirs. But I recognize there's something unique. Or I don't. Balak is recognizing something unique about Balaam's god that he tries to prepare for and set the stage for. It's not that they all worshipped him or fully understood him, but they all knew of him.
Well, see, now I'm not going to get chapter 23. I want to get... We have to finish chapter 22 then, all right? Next week we'll have to go to chapter 23. I thought we'd get through chapter 22 relatively quick. But, on the other hand, I want you to go to a very unusual area in chapter 22 here, starting in verse 20. Do you remember what the subject matter was? Elohim came to whom? Bilam. All right. What time? At night. Okay. He said something to him. If the men come to call, rise up and go with them. However, you are to speak my word only. In the simplicity of the word. Now we say, oh, he must have been talking about another god over there. You know, the stone god, or maybe an image of something else. No, he's talking about to the creator of heaven and earth. Because he mentions who he is. Verse 22. And Elohim's anger was kindled because he went. Almost like a contradiction, doesn't it? First get up and go, and he's mad because he's going. And we say, is God all mixed up? What was it? Tongue-in-cheek statement? Or was it real? No, that's not the issue. He didn't say go at night. He talked to him at night. That's it. All right? God didn't expect people to travel in the middle of the night. They got to see where they're going. They didn't have highways with streetlights and airlines and all. They didn't have all that kind of stuff where you can kind of hop on a plane and take off and land. It didn't work, you know, airports and all that. They had to travel by day, regardless whether you like it or not. You got to travel by day to see where you're going. What happens if you travel by night? What does the book of Psalms say? Little critters come out in the middle of the night. And they're going to eat. And they may eat you. And you can't see them. They're small. They're little. And poisonous and deadly. So, you know, stay away. So it's not an issue with day by night. But we will find out exactly precisely why he was angry if we keep on looking at this particular chapter and what he was angry about. Remember, Balaam was paid, this is the second time now, Balaam was paid a lot more the second time. And, you know, the book of, I'll get into that next week, talks about he did it for money. Okay, we'll talk about that later. We'll not get to it today at all. Well, maybe we will. I don't know. Verse 22, and he says, And Melech Yahuwah, the angel of the Lord, Melech Yahuwah, stood in the way as Satan. We use the word Satan thinking it's just one person. Satan is a word meaning an adversary. That's all it means. The simplicity of the word. So this Melech Yahuwah was a Satan. If I put it in simple words, two, of course. Whom? Yeah. Bil-am. Am means people. Bil means not. That's why it's very important to know the name. And he is the son of Peor Seir. Okay. So that it was kind of like a family trade, maybe. No. We'll talk about that when we get into the next two chapters, but we're not going to get there today at all. Now, let's drop down now. We don't need to go through the whole story. We read the story, but I want you to verse 32, what Melech Yahuwah said. Do you remember? Do you see what he said? He's going to kill him, right? And Elohim sent Melech Yahuwah with a sword to kill him. And Melech Yahuwah was not going to kill the donkey. So he had a sword to kill this guy. Remember, Balak had two friends with him. He wouldn't travel alone. He had two other people with him. They didn't see anything. They didn't hear anything. It said, Yahuwah, Elohim opened up the eyes of Balak. No one else's eyes were opened up, just his. And Elohim let the donkey speak. They didn't hear it. Nobody else heard it, just him. Now, it seems to me, if I was in his shoes, I would be, the donkey's talking! Yeah. But not necessarily if I was him. Because if you know who God is, you know God can make it talk. You had better pay really close attention. And remember, he was going to kill the donkeys. If I had a sword, I'd kill you. Right? And then Elohim opened up the eyes of this Seir, or son of a Seir. And lo and behold, he said, and Melech Yahuwah said unto him, where have you smitten thine ass these three times? Behold, I went out to withstand you. Why? because thy way is perverse. Why was he going? God said to go, but he went for a different reason. He went for a perverse reason, a wicked reason, twisting what the word was he was to say. He's going to go there but not say the words of Elohim. That's wickedness. That's perverse. You're perversing the word of God. That's the simplicity of this statement. And of course, what did he do? He fell on his face, right? First time that man, probably wasn't the first time. He had been afraid before, but this is probably one of the first times he was really, really terrified. Bill.
When Paul's on the road and he got struck blind, did the rest around him hear Yeshua or just Paul? I can't remember.
They heard a noise. They didn't hear the words.
But Paul did.
Paul did.
Okay.
I'm going to have to wrap it up here. But I just wanted to say this. Does it sound like God is contradicting himself? No. What's happened, he spent out, he said, you will speak my word. Now, he got up in the morning and left, and God said, wait a minute, he's going to twist, pervert my word. Oh, now I'm sending Melech Yahuwah to kill him. Well, to frighten him, frighten him so much. And then the next chapter, he did everything God wanted him to do. Yes.
Because if you think about this, you know, this is why Balaam was so upset, is that, you know, the donkey's acting all squirrely, and that's what his cohorts are seeing. They're seeing him on this donkey acting all squirrely, and he's going around. Right. You know, like, they got this psychotic donkey.
Yeah.
And so he was really embarrassed by it, because that's why he tells the donkey, you know, basically humiliated me, you've embarrassed me, you're acting all squirrely, and humiliated me.
Even in the vineyard, you know, out in the open field, and I'm not quite sure where the two walls were, but they're going through a passageway to probably where a house, a building were, and hurt the man's foot, you know. They had no idea. They're trying to save his life. Yes.
What's the difference between a prophet and a sayer?
Not. They're about the same.
Okay.
A prophet, what is the meaning of a prophet? One who tells the future? What is the meaning of a prophet? One who speaks the word of Elohim. That's anybody. All right. Joseph was a sayer. What did he say? The words of Elohim. He said to Pharaoh, this is not me. It is the creator of heaven and earth that showed me what this is all about. And he told him. See, we have a negative terminology in our English language because we're used to thinking, I'm not saying sayers cannot lie. They do lie. You remember there's a prophet, I don't know Daniel's gotten into that yet, but there's a prophet who told another prophet. Prophet of God, the prophet of God, and that prophet of God lied to the prophet of God that caused the prophet of God, the first guy, to die. Right? You remember that? So a prophet, by the way, can lie. And this is what Balaam was going to do. That's why God was mad. Not because he got up and went. He got up because he's going to twist the word. And this angel scared him so much to death. Next chapter he says, I'm going to tell you exactly what he said. I'm not going to. And he terrified him so much. He did exactly what he's supposed to do. All right. We won't get to the next chapter at all. I'm sorry. But I do want to go real quickly to Jude, book of Jude, to where we can have... It's one of the books we don't normally read. That's Jude. We'll be judging Jude. Just a brother of Peter, but beside the point. Unimportant individual, right?
Starting at verse 8. Likewise, also the dreamers defile the flesh, rejecting authority and speak evil of dignitaries, or the glorious ones. And yet Michael, the archangel, also contended with the devil, that he disputed about the body of Moses,
dared not bring against him a written accusation, but said, the word, the Lord, or Yahuwah, rebukes you. Now, you can't find that written in the Torah, can you? It's not there, but here. And he says, but speak evil, there, verse 10, but these who speak evil of whatever they do not know, and whatever they know naturally, like brute beasts, in these things, they corrupt themselves. Woe to them, for they have gone the way of Cain and have run greedily in the air of. Now, and there it is, plain as day. One of the story. We're not finished with this guy. We find out John. I think Daniel when he went through the book of. I can't remember. I think it's the book of Judges. Maybe it was book of Joshua, where they finally killed this prophet. We'll find out more what this guy has to say next week. I'm not going to finish it all. Yes.
The donkey, did he also receive a spirit of the Lord that he was able to speak and...
Not spirit of the Lord. He gave the donkey ability to speak.
Okay, so the donkey was the savior in a way.
Yeah, right.
And otherwise, the Lord, the destroyer, would have destroyed Balaam.
Okay. One thing I want to say a word. It's very fascinating now. Because God does not reveal an awful lot of things we cannot see, does it not mean the animal world cannot see those things? And they're not troubled by them. Now we say, well, no, they're like we. Well, doesn't say that. This one saw. And we think, oh, one time in history. No, I think, this is my thinking, Rich's thinking, worthless, but it's still my thinking. I think there's probably an awful lot of animals that do see the spirit world. But to them, it's nothing to be afraid of. They don't have to challenge it, whether it is or is not. They just exist. You have to be challenged. And you have to challenge that spirit. Bill.
I look at the donkey's thinking to himself, oh no, not this guy again.
But the donkey wasn't fearful for its life. It was fearful for its master's life. Why? Because that's the function of what they were created for. They're created to serve mankind. That's their job. You can tell me that story. That's their job. You get on a horse, the horse is going to obey because that's what his job is. That makes sense to you? Dogs obey because that's what they're supposed to do. Created to do that. All right? Respond to you. That's what they're there for.